sit right down in the hot seat where the masters, you're the apprentice. Since you're here with us, let's all discuss the woes of being a dentist. 'Cause doctors Ernst and Etch are here to shed some light, peel back the veneer. So let's all have a blast on the Dental Practice Heroes Podcast.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Dental Practice Heroes Podcast. I am your host, Dr. Paul Etchison, and I got a really special episode with you today. I got Dr. Henry Ernst on. He's my legendary DPH coach. He's doing some coaching with me, and he's taking on clients. If you are interested in working with Henry, as am I, taking on clients as well, you can find details on that at dentalpracticeheroes.com. We've got a great one today, and what we're talking about is a startup. And this is a person that has opened up a startup with a partner. And what's really great about this episode is it's nothing that we are talking about in this episode is specifically for this person's startup, that it works in any office. This is like, we just go through the basics of like, how do I grow an office? Where do I start? What do I do? What should I be focusing on at this part of my office? And I think no matter if you've had an office for 2 months or 20 years, this is a great place for you to really evaluate and say, hey, have I checked these boxes off? Because they are foundational and they are important and they will propel you to practice success. So I think they're, you know, no matter what stage of your practice career, this is a really great episode to listen to. And as always, the anonymous guest, I thank you so much for coming on the podcast. If you want to get a free coaching session and are willing to be anonymous on the podcast, please shoot me an email at dentalpracticeheroes@gmail.com. And Henry and I will talk it over with you and we'll disguise your voice just like we did on this episode. And thank you all for listening. I really appreciate it, everybody. Let's get to the episode. Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome back to another edition of the DPH Hot Seat. I am joined by my legendary coach, Dr. Henry Ernst. He's out there in sunny South Carolina. We were just talking about, if you're living up north by me in Chicago, man, it just got windy and cold all of a sudden this week. And it's just every time of the year when it gets like this, it feels colder than it really is. When it's 20 degrees this time of year, it's cold. When it's 20 degrees in the spring, it feels really nice. But yeah, how's it going, Henry?
It's going great. Everything's good.
It's awesome. All right. Well, we got our guest today. We're going to refer to our guest just like always. We refer to them as someone, an anonymous guest. We got Dr. John Smith here. What's happening, John? I guess tell us a little bit about your practice, and you don't have to give too much information, but just like size, practice, collection, just tell us your story.
Yeah, so just opened up a startup practice. We'll finish this week our fourth month being open. And I say we because I opened it with a partner, which was frowned upon by many, but did it nonetheless. So my good friend since childhood, we grew up together. We both served in the Army together, both got out of the Army at the same time about a year and a half ago, and wanted to open up a startup here where we're from. And so we're 4 months in.
And how big of a practice, like, or ops, or like, I get total capacity? What do you have equipped now? And what are your capacity? What can you go to?
The space is about 3,500 square feet, and it's equipped, or it's built out for 10 ops. Two of them are a little bit bigger with a door, kind of like a surgical suite, kind of an op. And we are currently only working out of two ops. We've got two equipped right now. He's there Monday, Wednesday. I'm there Thursday, Friday. And we have a hygienist that's there like two, sometimes 3 days a week, kind of depending on how busy the hygiene schedule is.
What kind of numbers are you guys doing 4 months in?
I can kind of go month by month here. So we got,
let's do it.
So August, we started on the 9th of August. And so in August, what do you want? Production, collections, both? What do you want?
I'd say a collectible production.
Okay.
Yeah, like adjusted production.
August, we did about 40K.
Awesome.
Just in that first month. So starting on the 9th. September, we did adjustable, would be about 60. And then October, we did just over 100. And then this month took a bit of a nosedive, and we're projected, because we've worked fewer days, which I was just looking at that. But this month we are going to end up probably around 50 again. So kind of way back to where we started out. I was looking, looks like we've worked about 13 days this month. So
do you have your new patient numbers?
Yeah. So new patient numbers starting August, we had 79 in August, 77 in September, 78 in October, and this month will probably be about 65-ish this month.
Fantastic. So what kind of issues are you running into? What can we help you with? What do we want to talk about? Where are you guys at? And what kind of struggles have you already just went through in 4 months? I mean, these are fantastic numbers and great new patient numbers. I mean, November being a disappointing month relative to a huge October, but still a very good month for a 4 month in startup.
Yeah, and I guess that's kind of it, is like, I feel like we're doing pretty well, but I don't know because I've never done it before and I don't know what to compare it to. And so it's encouraging to hear you say that, I guess, but some of the struggles would be, I guess, just knowing kind of what levers to pull or what steps to take next to build on the momentum. Like, obviously we could add another hygienist at a certain time, or we could build out another op at a certain time. So not really knowing like when to pull those levers, if that makes sense.
Are you guys working in other practices at this time?
For sure, yeah, because we haven't taken a paycheck yet. I mean, we took like a small, like a couple $1,000 each little draw this month just to kind of pay some bills and get ready for, so our kids aren't Tiny Tim for Christmas, you know. But we are both working in associateships 2 to 3 days a week and getting paid, just kind of living off of that right now, which has been okay, but it's starting to get a little tight, a little stressful. So,
a couple questions, I'll throw them together here. Number one is, I'm definitely a student of startups. So just, you can kind of just hone in on like how you found your location, what kind of demographic studies and all to pick your location, because it sounds like your new patient numbers are pretty darn good. Number two, have you figured out what your break-even point is right now, as far as what number you need to hit to start being profitable each month?
Mm-hmm. Question number one, we knew we wanted to come to this particular area. You know, we're in a growing area. It's like just outside of a somewhat major city in the Northwest. And so we knew we wanted to come back here, and we worked with a consulting company that works with startups, and they ran a demographic analysis for us and kind of narrowed in on like 4 to 5 areas within this kind of general area that we're in. And the one that we decided on actually wasn't one of the ones they recommended, but I think it's because we could kind of see, just being boots on the ground, like that this is where a lot of the growth was going to be, lots of new neighborhoods, lots of new businesses. And so even though maybe like the dentist to population ratio, based off the data that they were gathering, wasn't like what they would prefer, we knew that this was where we wanted to be. And it wasn't far off from the places they were recommending, but it's a lot closer to where we wanted to live, where we wanted the kids to go to school. So we honed in on that and just kind of move forward. It's a great area. It's got high socioeconomic area, lots of restaurants going in and neighborhoods, and it's a good spot. And then question number two, so our break-even point, we get an analysis from an accounting firm that we're working with each month, and they state in there kind of what the break-even point is. And I want to say the last, what we got for the end of October was like 54, 55K, something like that.
Yeah, I love the idea of the break-even point at like 55K, because you think you'll have employees and they'll see $600,000 across that desk and they'll be like, oh, Doc took home like 500K at that. You know, it's like, no, that just what it costs to keep the lights on. At this point, man, it's like, this sounds like very similar to my startup. That's what I'm seeing. Like, that's, we're always seeing about 80 new patients a month. And me looking back in retrospect, if I said, what would I have done differently at that level of that? So you guys are a 2-doctor practice, but I mean, you're kind of split in time. So we're just going to, for all sakes, just say it's a 1-doctor practice right now. You know,
you're split in time
there, but it's at 80 new patients where you're at as far as collections and stuff. This is still kind of a 1-doctor practice. But the one thing that I would say that I did not do that I think I would have done knowing what I know now is we never used to block out for new patients. And we were just happy because like right now, like you have a wide open schedule. You can see a new patient whenever you want. And you're not really thinking ahead 6 months from now. But the thing is that 6 months from now, you're going to get a little bit more busy. You can see an 80 new patients a month. And then probably a year from now, you're going to start to feel a little bit of a pinch as you guys are going through your second recall cycle. And I remember maybe it was about a year to year and a half of our startup of seeing that many patients. We got to a point where we just had so many, we couldn't get new patients in because we had so much recall on the books. And the reason being is we weren't holding spaces for new patients. One thing that I would always think about that I wish I would have employed earlier in my practice was to block out for new patients 6 months ahead so that you could hold that space. You're almost creating a capacity problem. It's almost like an artificial capacity problem, but it's really not, because you're going to fill that with new patients. I mean, you're consistently showing I mean, we're only 4 months in, but, you know, 70 to 80 new patients a month, that's high growth. And if you can retain and focus on the reappointment rate on that, I think within one recall cycle, how many days are your hygienist right now?
Like two and a half.
Two and a half. Yeah. And you guys are open a total of how many days?
Four.
Okay.
We do the hygiene when she's not there.
Right. Yeah. And I did that too. And I was kind of lucky because my wife was a hygienist and it was like, I didn't really have to pay her. So I wasn't really all that concerned about taking on extra payroll. But at a certain point, you're going to feel where I could have been doing something else. I could have been doing something else like than cleaning teeth. And I wish I would have hired more hygienists faster because I was a little bit slow to hire hygiene because I had my wife, but she was just kind of part-time at the beginning. I think that's what the focus right now is. You're just kind of having fun. You're enjoying yourself. And you're like, wow, like we're pretty breaking even on these months. This is fantastic. But then at the same time, you do want to be more forward thinking and looking ahead. So for me, looking ahead at this level of your practice is one, stocking up on reviews, just trying really hard to get reviews and grow a reputation in your community, get seen. And that could be like boots on the ground, like showing up at things, or that could be like just posting on social media, but just letting people find out about you. And then the populating the reviews and then seeing how fast you can move to hygienist model where the patients are coming through hygiene and then you're focusing on just doing operative and taking care of emergencies. And then it's just, for me, it's just blocking out those new patients 6 months out so that when you get to that point, you don't go through this period of, because the thing is when you don't block out for new patients and if you reach a point where it's recall and you have no room for new patients, when you figure that out, you won't be able to fix that for a while because it's just like hygiene. Hygiene is always 6 months ahead. And that's a crappy few months because you're just like, everyone's hygienists are like, woo, we're so busy. And the doctors are like, dude, I got nothing to do. But I mean, like I said, this was a very similar numbers to mine. And I know, I think it took me, I want to say maybe three and a half, four years to get an associate. But I think in retrospect, I should have been ready about year two. And it was a lack of focus on reappoint. It was just, man, all this gravy coming in. Who cares if we're reappointing them? We're busy. We got places to put them. It was me overlooking that fundamental that I think caused us to, and it's not something to complain about. I mean, we still grew very fast and we still did very well, but we could have got there faster. What do you think, Henry? Like at this level of startup, what's like the big focus?
First off, congrats. I mean, this is a great start, really great start. And
thank you.
A couple things come into my mind. I mean, my practice is very similar to Paul's. We started off in November and we had like about 80 new patients. I was just myself. It was just myself. Second month, December, we were about 82. And then all of a sudden, January, we jumped up to 100. And I was similar to Paul. I actually did similar but different is I actually hired a hygienist quickly, maybe quicker than I shouldn't have, because I hated cleaning teeth.
Yeah.
Couldn't stand it, right? About 2 weeks in, I was like, wow, we're getting these new patients. And I started right away and I hired that next hygienist. And when we started out, we had four chairs, so it was just myself. I was working somewhere, and I really quickly stopped it. I said, you know what? I'm better off staying here, even days where I'm not working, but I would just stay in the office, and I would do different things. I think one thing that we have to hone on here is kicking those systems into place. What do I mean by that, right? You're going to develop problems in the future, right? One thing I did not do, like Paul didn't do either, is block out for new patients. I wish I would have done that. But we were so full, like it was great. But what I mean by dialing in systems is there's so many little things. Like, is your hygienist at the end of a visit asking your patient, okay, great, let's get your next appointment scheduled. And how about anybody else in the family? I love that line. It works so great for a startup because now you didn't spend a dollar on marketing and now maybe you had a great experience, which is all the reviews you're getting is amazing. So I think you said 71 the last time we talked or something like that. That's great.
We got 99 today, actually. Wow. Number 99 today.
So. That's fantastic.
That's amazing. So you've already got great systems right there as an example, but let's make sure all the other systems in place because as you grow, it gets exponentially more difficult, right? So if I were you, I would jump on another hygienist. They're not the easiest thing to hire as it was when I did my startup.
Yeah.
I would definitely jump on board. And another question, what services do you guys provide? What specialty services do you do? What do you not do? What gets referred out?
Between my partner and I, we pretty much do almost everything. He likes to do ortho. He's trained in like traditional kind of bracket wire ortho. We both do Invisalign as well. I do all, wisdom teeth, most all cases impacted and everything. And then between the two of us, we can do like onesie twosie implants, obviously traditional kind of crown and bridge stuff. And we do a little bit of pros. We got a patient yesterday, we were like relining a denture, and tomorrow I've got a guy that I'm going to extract a bunch of teeth and do an immediate denture. So, but nothing as far as like implant denture stuff. So.
And then how many days are you working in the associateship?
I was just doing 2 days in an associateship. And then about 3 weeks ago, I picked up a third day at actually like a, it's like a corporate pediatric office that just pays me kind of a minimum, a guaranteed rate each day just to supplement. Cause like I said, it's getting a little tight here. So.
You know what? I want to just piggyback off what you said, Henry, about the systems is that you're at a good spot for growth. And it's like, well, we've only been open 4 months. Is this going to continue? Is it going to get worse? Is it going to get better? Are we going to continue to see this level of new patients? I think if you're seeing this many new patients at this point, it's only going to get better as you grow and you take great care of people. And part of me almost thinks, like Henry said, I was the same way, Henry. Like I left my associateship after like 6 weeks because I was like, my time's more better spent here. And there was a part of it where I was just kind of done with that associateship and I was just really excited to be at the startup. But you get to do this special thing with your startup, and Henry's talked about this before, it's that you create the culture and people come into that culture. So it's like, while focusing on just paying the bills and keeping the lights on, it's also really important to kind of like, what is our mission? What is our vision? What do we stand for? What is our brand really about? And communicating that to everybody on your team. And as well as like Henry said, these little things that make this big difference. Because if you get someone that you get the hygienist saying what Henry said to book a few added patients that you hadn't do any cost for, like they just came from an existing patient, you'll get that second hygienist. And this is how we do things here. And then this is how we do things here. Rather than you get to a point and you go, and this is what I see a lot of people do. They grow, they don't pay much attention to this, and they get to the point of like instability, maybe about 8 to 10 team members. And they go, oh man, I need systems. It is, we just, things are, the wheels are coming off. It's unorganized. I'm stressed out. And the thing was, is that right now is a great time for you to be doing this. You're not going to see dollars when you sit there and figure out all this stuff because you're sitting in your office, you're thinking, you're communicating with your team, you guys are collaborating together, but it is going to make you grow exponentially faster. And I always loved, because I was doing that early on and that's what I was using my time to do. But I always said, like, I loved that people would come into my practice into a fantastic culture and I didn't have to change the culture. And I think being a big practice right now, I mean, I can tell you the more people you get, it's harder. We still have a great culture at my practice right now, but I mean, we're 40 plus people and it always ebbs and flows, I feel like. And I miss that small team culture when I feel like it was easier. So I think like a big system, Henry, like, what do you think like is, I mean, you mentioned that thing, but what are like the big systems to someone to focus on right off the bat?
I was going to ask the same thing.
Yeah.
As you grow, a perfect example is when you bring a new team member on, right? A new dental assistant, let's say. Well, sometimes how do they get trained? So most oftentimes there's the more experienced dental assistant shows them through a course of a day and they train them. Well, sometimes that's not a good system because maybe that assistant's not having a good day. Maybe that assistant does one thing subpar and she's training somebody the wrong way. What we did is we developed videos. As an example of McDonald's, if you go to McDonald's to learn how to make fries, they don't just stick you out there. They have you watch a video. The video is perfectly made. They knew this, everything is good. And 10 minutes later, boom, you're making fries. We developed so many videos that we have. So when somebody comes on board, a brand new dental assistant, there's like 5 or 6 starter videos that they watch. How do we sit a patient? How do we greet a patient? How do we clean the rooms? How do we do this? And so this way, we know it's perfect. So this way, it's all good. And we know our training systems are not failing. So that's just one thing. Another thing that was in my brain while you were talking is, I don't know if maybe I'm older. Remember Indiana Jones, in the very beginning of Indiana Jones, when he's replacing the idol with the sand and he's trying to make the weight the exact same? That's kind of what you need to focus on. You're essentially getting income-wise, or those like the idol and the sand, you're basically trying to say, hey, this is my income here with the associateship. I'm trying to replace that slowly with the practice so I can eventually get out of that associateship. And one thought that comes to mind is you can do, especially doing wisdom teeth and stuff like that, maybe you can start at some point doing like Fridays where maybe in the morning you're booking just wisdom teeth, just surgical cases, and you block that time out for surgical stuff, stuff that's high production. You don't need lots of employees. Maybe you just need one to help you that day. And then maybe the afternoon, that same day, you're doing operational stuff, stuff that's getting your systems in place, working on processes and stuff like that. Because as you grow, once those things are in place, it'll make it that much easier.
Yeah, totally. You know what I just thought of too, Henry and John, is that, and I have a coaching client right now that his wife is a hygienist and she just got her stuff and she's working at the practice and they are running just a few issues recently of who's the boss here. I've never had a partner. I have a partner right now, an equity partner in my practice. And she's great because we had this conversation is that you have equity and I'll discuss things with you, but ultimately I'm still steering the ship. I foresee like figuring out what is your role and what is your partner's role in this practice? Because I can tell you from this one client I have, it's a lot like when the kids go to mom and mom says no, and then they go to dad and they ask something and then mom and dad are mad at each other because they're contradicting each other. So it's almost like this chain of command. You're opening up with two people, two owners, whereas it's not like somebody coming in buying into an existing practice that already had like the leader. How's that working out thus far?
I haven't noticed any issue with that, honestly. I think it helped that, like I said, we were stationed together in the Army. We actually shared an office together for like a year and a half before we even got out of the Army. So we knew how each other worked. We've known each other since we were kindergarten. We trust each other. So we went to very similar dental schools. So we're on the same page in a lot of ways. And if there's been a kind of a precedent set that if there are decisions that are more than just kind of basic day-to-day stuff, that we just kind of consult each other with those things and make sure we're on the same page, especially if it's involving like talking to a team member about something, we'll kind of talk about it first together. Hey, how are we going to handle this? And then we go and handle it. So it hasn't fortunately been an issue so far.
How big is your team right now?
We started with one assistant, one front desk, and then the hygienist who's there just like I said, 2.5 days a week. And then maybe a month ago, we brought on a gal who just comes in on Fridays and she just does insurance stuff for us. She's, you know, verifying and following up on outstanding balances, things like that. She was kind of a friend recommended her to us because she used to do insurance full time for a practice. And then she got out for a couple of years when she was raising her kids. And now she's kind of wanting to slowly get back into it. So it's just a really good fit.
Yeah. I miss those days, man. I miss those days so much. I was just so on fire about the practice and it's just so fun to, especially when you start these systems for the first time, you're like, hey, this is kind of messed up how we do this. And you come up with a new way to do something. You're like, this is great, man. My life's going to be so much easier now. But then it's like whack-a-mole, like a new one comes up. And then now it's, I can't even hit all the moles. There's just so many I got now.
Well, you were talking about how important it is to like figure those things. I mean, even today, our hygienist had a fairly full schedule today. And she called us early this morning, really sick.
Yeah.
And we were like, oh, we haven't encountered this before. We should probably have like a list of people, hygienists, as subs to call, you know, like,
yeah.
Why didn't we think of this? You know?
Yeah, that's tough, yeah, man.
You're going to be plugging holes in the boat as you go along. And that's totally normal. And I totally get a bit nostalgic too, like when you're talking about when looking back, like when we first started, you're hungry. I mean, you don't know, like your instinct is like, oh my God, is this going to fail? I'm signing my name on a lot of paperwork right now. And looking back, I mean, I did all kinds of stuff on my time when I made time. February, I went to like 3 different schools, elementary schools, and handed out tons of stuff to each kid. And I did a great presentation.
Used to do that too.
I made it fun. Used to do that, right? Now my team does it, right? Am I a bad person for that? I don't know, but I mean, they do that now. And as you grow, like I think there's going to be steps here. Right now you're in that beginnings phase, getting out of the gate phase. We got to get profitable. We got to get you out of that associateship. Maybe slowly but surely you add another op and take on it because it's nerve wracking, right? Oh my God, I'm going to take on another op. I'm going to take on another hygienist. But every time you add a hygienist, it just adds revenue because that's more fuel for the doctors. You know, ultimately, your goal should be to have 2 hygienists while you're working. That's going to require more capacity.
Well, here we are, and holiday season is among us. And if you are like me who just dropped Delta and saw a 30% decrease in new patients recently, you are asking Santa for more new patients. So if you want more new patients, I got to tell you, Relevance Online Marketing is the best. They are who I've been working with. And if you want to see an absolutely beautiful website that they have created, you can go to their website or you can go to mine and look at my practice, nelsonridge.com. They just updated it and man, it is gorgeous. I've gotten compliments from patients on it. And if you want something like that, Relevance Online Marketing is for you. There is no contract. And if you mention that you heard of them on the Dental Practice Heroes podcast, you will get the first month free to try them out and see how it is. They will not hijack your site. You still own everything. You still have all your passwords to everything. And it's not like those other marketing companies because I've been burned in the past. But I've been with this company for almost 5 years now, and there's a good reason for it. So if you want a marketing company that's going to work hard for you and do the things that you want them to do without you constantly telling them, Relevance Online Marketing is for you. Check them out at relevanceonlinemarketing.com. And again, mention the Dental Practice Heroes podcast. Get that first month for free.
And I guess that's the question I have, I guess, is like with adding a hygienist, you say that it boosts productivity, but we have some days where our one hygienist, we end up calling her and say, hey, why don't you just come in just for the afternoon, you know, because we had a couple patients to follow off or something. So in my mind, I'm like, we can not quite yet justify having the one hygienist completely full-time because she's not busy all the time. So why would we hire a second one? Like, I don't know when that time is to hire a second one.
Well, I think looking at it is, if I called your practice tomorrow morning, when can I get in for a hygiene visit?
Within 2 days, probably. Or if you've got a few holes still in the schedule. So.
You guys started in August. Let's say September was the first, like, real full month. So that means March, which is not that far away from now. Go look at your March schedule and look at all the space there. And let's say 80 patients filled that in, new patients. What's that schedule going to look like for that hygienist? And as far as I'm concerned, I think a lot of times when we look at hygiene, we say, gosh, these wages, how do we keep up with this? How do I pay somebody this? And this is what I'm getting for a pro fee and a PPO. But the thing is I've seen it so many times in so many practices, it just doesn't matter. And like Henry said, it is a revenue stream. And the value that a hygienist provides, it's in the hygiene chair, but it's not like, oh, I'm gonna make so much money because I'm gonna get so many hygienists going. I'm gonna get a pro fee mill. That's not what it's about. It's about getting volume through your practice and allowing yourself to grow. So like when I'm looking at you guys, two ops right now outfitted?
Mm-hmm.
Man, I would say it's time to outfit that third one. And I think looking ahead in that schedule and you're thinking about just because right now, man, like when I started up, it was 2012 and we put out an ad and I remember setting up interview days. Like we interview four in a row and then it'd be like, man, well, we'll let you know. And we're getting people are calling us back and saying, hey, like, I'm just really interested. I didn't hear anything. That ain't how it is now. You know what I mean? So like, it's like. Like if you realize in maybe 3 to 6 months from now, you're like, well, you really need a hygienist. You might be waiting another 6 months to even find one.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I feel like the struggle is that do I feel safe now? Is this practice safe? Is it going to work? And same thing when I started, I was like, I don't know if we're going to grow. I don't know if we're going to see new patients. Henry, what would you say 4 months in with these kind of numbers? I mean, is it safe to say we're location's good and we're going to be okay?
It sounds like the proof of concept is there. It sounds like the patients are getting good experiences. So my opinion is the same, is I would add that next chair. I know it sounds scary, but it's so true. Every time I've done it, my practice, we expanded 4 times. And every time we did it, it was capacity decision, but we always said, you know what? It always just works. The more providers we add, especially hygienists, the more profitable we come, the more fuel the doctors have for doctor treatment. I would start looking at metrics, though, with your hygienist. What's our reappointment rate? Have you been looking at that with the hygienist?
Yeah, so our hygiene reappointment rate average over these 4 months is 81%.
Okay, so that's something that right there, there's low-hanging fruit right there, right? That should be 95, especially with the reviews you're getting. Nobody should leave the office. This is a mantra in our office. Nobody ever leaves the office without another appointment on the books. If they're in a doctor chair and they just had a crown finish, like, oh, let's just check. Oh, Jane, you already have your hygiene appointment for March. Just a reminder. But if they didn't have that, then they're trained to, oh, we don't have anything on the books for you. Let's get you on. Everybody needs to have that mantra that nobody leaves the practice without a future appointment. Because if you do that, like Paul said, you're going to look at your schedule March, April, when all those recalls are coming back, and now you're going to have a capacity issue. If you add the hygienist now, it's not as easy as it used to be. I'm the same exact way, Paul. We had so many people coming in 2014. It's not the same now. So I would do that now. It sounds scary, I know, but trust me, it's going to work.
And you know who screws up this reappoint stuff? It's the doctor. It's always the doctor. It's the patient that needed a lot of work, and they're like, and then I'm just going to see the doctor. I got to go get my fillings from the doctor. And then the doctor says, hey, well, we got it all done. Good to see you. Take care. And they just walk out of the practice, and they never made their hygiene visit. Mm-hmm. This was something we went through. We were like, well, let's follow a reappoint rate. Okay, and for our practice, our metric has always been 85%. We want it to be above 80. That's how we keep it. But it was funny because then the doctor reappoint rate was like 40. It was like, well, I'm not going to reappoint him. Like, that's not my job. And then it's like, no, it's like, this is my job. This is what we did today. This is what I see. This is what you can expect. And let's see what's next. What's next for you? You always got to focus on what's next.
Yeah.
There are just so many little things to be focusing on now. And it's like, you don't have to. You are going to survive if you don't. But if you want to optimize everything, this is like this time to do it.
I had a question for you about kind of going back to one of the things you're talking about at the beginning. You were talking about blocking out time 6 months from now for new patients. I hear a lot of talk about the importance of block scheduling. You want to have time in your day for like very productive procedures. And obviously that doesn't make sense to do that right now just because we're just trying to fill the schedule.
There's no demand.
But is that something? Yeah, but like 6 months from now, should we be doing that type of blocking, not just new patients, but also blocking out for the crown cases and things like that?
That's a good question. So like right now, first step is new patients and SRP blocks. And I always tell people, whatever as many new, see now you could probably get away with like putting 60 maybe new patient blocks. What kind of capacity is that going to put your hygienist at? You know what I mean? But I always tell people just to go about 130% of what they're normally seeing. But most people that are starting block scheduling that I'm talking to are already functioning and going. For every new patient block you got, you're going to need about one third is SRPs, because we always think about maybe 15% of our new patients will need SRP, some kind of perio. And typically that's what I see in practices. So they'll need two quads. So they'll need two visits for every six new patient appointments. But when you get to the point where you're seeing that your schedule is busy, so I would just book things where they fit now. Doesn't make sense to hold space. But when you see demand in your schedule where like your days are pretty full, and by pretty full, I don't mean like morning till stop, because when we're putting things wherever they fit, we create inefficiency gaps. So, but when you've got like, maybe you just have like a few 20 minutes here, a 30 minute here, that's when I think it's time to start doing major blocking, setting up blocks for bigger procedures. And it's not hard to do. We always did two or three crowns a day. That's just what we found. When I first discovered blocking, I was like, shit, let's do six a day. This is awesome. Because it's like, well, if I put a block on the schedule, I'm going to cut six crowns a day. No, it doesn't
if
work.
If you build it, they will come.
It doesn't work like that, because I wasn't diagnosing that many. And most people would say like you'd have to diagnose 18 crowns a day to cut six crowns a day. So it comes when you have the demand. Right now, you can do it if you're just like, man, you know, I just want to, first thing in the morning, I want to cut a crown. I mean, but that's all it's going to do for you. It's just going to kick off your day with it. I don't think there's really a reason to do it now. I think it's first, it's blockout hygiene. Then when the demand comes, block out your major blocking. And then when you see that capacity 6 months ahead, we need more hygienists. We just need them. I think your new patient numbers, where they're at, they're just only going to go up. I would bet you in a year, you're seeing 110, 120 new patients a month at this rate that you're going at. Henry, like, you're never big on blocks, but like, what would you say?
I think one thing that was the heart of our practice that grew us really fast is we were lucky, got a hygienist about 2 weeks in. And then about another month later, I was like, let's get another one. We need another one. And it was a tough decision, because it was like, I was like on the fence and I was just myself. This was the key. We got two hygienists and all of a sudden the numbers took off, right? Went 70, 70, 100. I think the fourth month was like 140, and it kept going. But also training, making sure that these hygienists are on the same page. This is a whole nother discussion, but we did a whole training program and we all had to agree, because this is what you get in doctor's offices sometimes. You get the hygienist who doesn't want to have the periodontal conversation and they do the red profies. You don't want to be that practice that does that. But you also don't want to be looked at as that doctor who's like, oh, I do SCRP to everybody. No, that's not how we are. Let's agree that, hey, if we have a patient that has this, this, and this, we all agree that that's going to be a gum infection therapy patient. We don't even say SCRP. We say gum infection. And make sure that they're all on the same page. make sure that they're all on the same page with, hey, do we agree that fluoride is something good for our patients? Yes. Well, let's all agree that we'll offer that to every single patient. And if they don't have insurance, let's just come up with a number. Back then in 2014, we said $25. If they don't have insurance, we're just going to tell them $25. You don't imagine how much that adds to, like, it's kind of like going to Chipotle, right? They always ask you if you want queso. Why? Because if everybody says yes, that's another dollar to every person that comes in. So maybe I'm going off on a tangent, but making sure that you always agree on the same gum infection therapy or SCRP protocols, making sure you always agree that we always want to offer fluoride, make sure that, hey, patient has a sensitive tooth. Why don't we bring that up? Hey, there's something we can do. We can put a little Gluma, or we use brush and bond to resolve that. That's another $40. So adding these little services, because these are all good things for the patients, that's how you have to talk about it with the staff. It's not putting money in your pocket. It's about good services and treating the patients the best way possible. But that hygiene production goes through the roof. Now all of a sudden that $100, $200 regular x-rays and whatever visit is now it's like $300. And you didn't do anything else. You didn't take that much time. So dialing in those things and getting the hygienist, maybe just getting the one chair right now and starting up and then just making that commitment, I think you're going to take off after that, in my opinion.
And with the hygiene too, is everything you do now, even though it doesn't seem necessary to do right now, that you are creating the example for the future employees. Your front desk team member, the way that they talk on the phone, it's like, I don't want to do phone skills with just one person, you know, like, gosh, like it's just one person. But that is the way that they are going to train the next person. That is going to train the next person. And same thing with your hygienist. New hygienist is going to come in here and say, oh gosh, like I should be offering fluoride to everybody. I should. Okay. This is how we do. These are perio patients, you know? So it's like, you got this golden opportunity to create just amazing practice from the get go. That's going to be so much easier to create now, even though there's not the revenue to really say, oh, let me drop my other associate. But that's going to be so much easier on you in the future. So that's what I keep thinking about, is that's the greatest part about the startup. I just don't know if I could do an acquisition. I just think I'm a nice guy, but I just think I'd be such a dick or something. Yeah. I don't know. I just feel like I wouldn't be able to go in there and get buy-in. I don't know. It's like, it's a personal thing of mine. I don't know if I could do it.
It's 100% easier to coach somebody in your position that's got that, like doing an art project, that's got an open canvas. Mm-hmm. I think people who do acquisitions, those are the ones that come, and they're tough ones sometimes because the staff is used to this. They're used to this. And now you're trying to change things. You have the open canvas, like I said. So create it well. I mean, another good thing that I would always say is with doctors is make sure that you're given, we call it the whole enchilada treatment plan. You got somebody that comes in, you just meet them, they have a good experience, and you're giving them what I call the whole enchilada. Maybe it's like 7 crowns and 2 root canals and a lot of stuff.
Queso.
Make sure you're always giving them the backup treatment plan. The backup treatment plan is just pick one thing. Pick one thing. One tooth that looks just really ominous, and put that on the screen at the end and just tell them, you know what, Jane, it's a lot of work, but just so you know, I'm going to have my staff put together a backup treatment plan. So, and you have that picture of that broken tooth right on the screen right there if you have TVs in front. And so we're going to have a backup treatment plan because I'm concerned, important wording, I'm concerned about this tooth. This tooth, the way that it's left, is going to cause you a toothache or cause you infection. And then your treatment planners, when your assistant leaves the room, they should already, if you did a good job, they should already know what the treatment plan is. But they should get it in their back of their brains and get so much repetition that they know. When my treatment planner walks in the room, they're going to have the whole enchilada treatment plan. And then, but they're going to be trained. So this way, when Jane says, oh my God, $12,000, I can't do that. They're trained to say, okay, Jane, I understand. We never prepare for dentistry. It's a lot of money. I understand. That's why the doctor has this treatment plan. And it's already printed out. It's ready to go. And you'll get a lot more treatment plan acceptance. That's a little thing that you can do while you're maybe having admin time, if you start setting aside a day to do that. This way, as the team grows, the next treatment planner that comes on board is already going to be trained on how you do this. And you can even create those videos so it talks about that too.
No, I like that.
We use Open Dental. So there's actually a button that is PPD, our practice is Pleasant Plains Dental, PPD training videos. And you can click on that. It opens up all of our training videos.
Really?
Oh, cool. We got Open Dental. I didn't know you could do that.
I feel like there's so much new stuff coming out with Open Dental I don't even know about. I feel like I'm not using it.
My integrator learned that a few years ago, and I was like, whoa, that's cool.
I liked what you guys were saying about the startup. I've known since I was starting dental school almost that I wanted to start up for that same reason. Like, I didn't want to inherit somebody else's staff, somebody else's old equipment, somebody else's systems. It's a bit of a grind right now, but like you said, the idea of creating my own thing from the beginning has always just been super attractive to me.
Yeah. I mean, that's the great part about just startups are fun. I just find them nostalgic. But there are days where I'm just like, I'm doing it again. I'm getting back. I just want to do it again. And then there's days I'm just like, I don't want to go in a dental office for the rest of my life.
So look in the mirror in the morning and smile, right? You're at that like part where we're getting nostalgic. It's like, we remember those days. I was doing like lots of stuff that I never do now, right? And you just did it. And it's amazing like how the hard work put in now is going to give you exponential effects down the future.
I just remember like driving home and being like doing my math in my head. Okay, wait, what did we make today? And this and being like, I can't believe people are paying me to do this. People come in, I'm like, I just can't. It was such a cool feeling. What I was just thinking about as you were talking, Henry, is something that I wouldn't say regret, but another thing that I did at my practice that I think I did way too late was bringing on not a full leadership team, but bringing on one leader, like, and giving them a lot of responsibility. And this was like, I made my main front desk person, my office manager. We declared it to the office. We declared a role. We said, this is what she's going to be. This is the relationship between you guys and her now. And I think we were like maybe 14, 15 people at that point. I don't know when. And Henry is huge on EOS and organizational structure and stuff. I wonder, like, when is the ideal point to do that, to bring on like that extra team member that's just focused on that growth stuff?
I still struggle with that to this day. Like, what's the correct point to do that? Because it's really impossible to do it in the beginning. It needs to be at a certain point. If I look back on it, by the time I did it, I was about 3 years into the startup. I think at that time we were at 9 or 13. And it would just get into the point where one day it just hit me. It was like, my admin days are just way overwhelming. I'm doing way too much. And that's where we brought on everything. So I'd probably say when you're about maybe close to 10 would probably be a good time. But I think at some point you need to keep your eyes on the ball and say to yourself, you need to look out for that integrator. I think integrators, I like the term integrator better than office manager, because office manager is a term that people give to the person who's been up front and has the most time. But maybe they're just
the longest.
Yeah, it just doesn't. But an integrator is the true leader. You guys, the top up here, are going to be the visionaries, the people who have the big, bold ideas, the bosses, right? But eventually when you get to start having weekly meetings, your integrator is the one who talks and does all the talking and all the leading. And this is a whole nother conversation, but that's a lot of structure that gets put into place. But you too should be the last ones to talk. You should be the ones that are just listening. And when there's problems, they come up with these solutions. And then this way they'll own it more. But I think that's the really hard thing that we struggle with helping people with startups, is when is that time to do the leadership team?
I think it's when you get overwhelmed, right? It's like you just feel it. You're like, dude, this sucks.
Right now, I think you just got to keep your eye on the ball and just keep your eye out for somebody who maybe be a good leader, maybe a good visionary or a good integrator. And there's lots of different tests you can do to test if somebody's a good integrator. But that's what I would do now. But once you get to about 10, I think close to 10, or you're starting to feel overwhelmed, maybe whichever one comes first.
Yeah, I almost feel like you'll just know. I'm just curious. We're talking a lot about like, what are the things to do like right out of the gate with startup? I mean, you're 4 months in. What so far or thus far has been, I mean, the biggest conundrum of the past 4 months? Like, we were like, whoa, wasn't expecting that. Didn't know how to handle that.
It was probably 2 to 3 weeks ago. So we had our front office administrator, front desk, whatever you want to call her. And she was like initially feeling super overwhelmed because she was in a front office position before, but it wasn't the man up front, you know, like doing everything. And so she was pretty overwhelmed. And that's why we started looking to bring on. And there were some things kind of falling through the cracks. So there was a few instances where we had someone come in, they got their new patient exam, their prophy, and then we find out after the fact that we actually weren't in network with their insurance. It was like, oh, great. So hey, you got to have that conversation with the patient. And so that happened a couple of times. And that's when we started to look to bring on this gal that's here one day a week doing insurance stuff. We had experience with it. So she had come on, she'd been there once or twice. And we could tell that there was like a little bit of, I don't want to say attitude, but kind of almost like a little turf war thing going on with our original employee. And she was saying, I don't know, there's just something about her, you know, the way she likes to point out mistakes I'm making and this and that. And it was like, hey, like, I didn't know how to handle that situation. But it was just, yeah, it's just like, hey, she's here to make your job easier. It's just a natural course of the process that we're going through, that as we get bigger and we grow, that we're going to add more people on. And that doesn't mean that you're not good at your job. It just means that we need more help. So that was kind of a tough scenario to, and it's still kind of working itself out a little bit, but that's the first thing that came to my mind.
I've got something for that. I want to hear what you think, Henry.
I'm a big fan of Colby testing. Is, I don't know if you're familiar with it, but Colby testing is tests like four main parameters to people. It gives you good ideas of what tasks you can give to certain people. If somebody has a high follow through, that's my favorite person. That means I'm going to give them something and it's going to get done. Somebody may have very low follow through and they may be a high fact finder. That's the worst person sometimes, because that's somebody who's going to look at the detail, look, but never finish anything. So Colby testing, I want to say if you get, it may cost you like $50 for an employee. And there's even practices that are so into it that they'll even have on their name tag badges what their Colby is. And if you get the practice to doing it, it actually helps you with treatment plan acceptance too. So you said one thing that's interesting is that, yeah, now I got two people. Now there's a dynamic, right? Well, fast forward and imagine having 5 to 6 people.
Yeah.
And you got the front versus the back dynamic, which is always there.
Always.
Now you've got the hygiene versus the assistant dynamic. It's only going to get more complicated, especially looking forward. I mean, we're looking towards a 10-operatory practice in the future. And we're also looking forward to probably an associate on board, probably 4 hygienists hired by the practice in some capacity. So there's going to be a lot of that. So this is just the beginning. So enjoy it now.
Yeah. It's funny because, like, the thing is, it's just inevitable. And I always go back and forth between this. Like, we just had a big blowout this week. We had 2 assistants say, I'm not giving my 2 weeks. This is my last shift. We just started a new associate today. This just happened yesterday. So the new associate comes in, no assistants. It got a little chaotic and they both went to the same practice. It's hurtful and it pisses me off. But I'm trying to think where the F I was just going with this. What the hell were we just talking about? Oh, I know it. Okay, here we go.
You're just
I know
pissed.
It. No,
you're
yeah, I just wanted to talk about it. People on my team, they listen. They know that you guys listen. I'm still pissed off, girls. I'm still freaking pissed. I think you're at the point, like, I keep saying, like, thing, like, what is your trajectory or what is your vision, your mission? Like, what is all that? What do you stand for? And this is a fantastic opportunity to set that precedent of, like, hey, our practice is about getting the best at every single thing. And that doesn't mean that we're bad. It just means we're training up to be the best. And if somebody notices something's wrong, it's a gift that we're getting coached and that we're learning a new thing and learning how to do our job better. And, like, I've always said it, and I know my team makes fun of me. I say grace over guilt. I say it all the freaking time. And it creates this culture and this dynamic that people are like, you know what? They're not, like, defensive. Like, oh, I'm sick of getting somebody pointing out my stuff. They're saying, tell me more about that. Like, I want to know more. Like, I want to understand. Let me understand this so I can explain it to somebody else. What it is this person's probably feeling a little like, wow, I'm the top dog here. And now it's like somebody comes in and is like, hey, you're doing stuff wrong. Like, well, I wasn't doing anything wrong until you showed up. Like, get out of here. You don't belong here. I've been here for the past 4 months since we opened. I found that has always helped the dynamic at my office. And I think that's why, I mean, we had no turnover for 9 years and a team of like 27 people. And I think it's because we are always so forgiving of the thing was like our culture of coachability, we called it. We are always coaching. We will never reach a point where we're perfect. There will always be mistakes and there will always be forgiveness and grace. But every time there's a mistake, we're going to sit there and say, what did I learn from this? Me and my leadership team just did that yesterday. We decided we're pissed. One of them, see you later. We're okay with it. The other one, we were really surprised about. And we said, is this something we're doing? We talked about that for a while. And then we said, you know what? Let's move forward. What are we going to learn from this? And what are we going to change? And what we came up with was that sometimes I think these newer people come into our practice, and us OGs that have been there for a long time, we're kind of in our little clique. And when we go do social functions, I'm kind of hanging out with the same 8 people that have been there like for like 10 plus years. And I just like, man, maybe I had to get it there and try to talk to these younger girls. And these, even though every time I do, I say like the most ridiculous things and I sound like such a like, I don't know. I don't even know how to talk. And then I walk away from the conversation. And I'm like, you're so stupid. But this is what we came up with. We sat down and we said, what are we going to learn? Every time something goes wrong. every time somebody drops that fee for service patient, that or not the fee, but the out of network patient, you got to look at that. How do we handle this for one? But hey, guys, what is the idea and what are we going to do in the future so we don't do this again? I'm not blaming anybody, but what is our safety guard for this? Because one thing that if someone looked at your numbers, they go, oh, you're fine with just having one person at the front. But 80 new patients and 80 insurance breakdowns and 80 treatment plans, maybe 50 treatment plans, some of them larger, that's a lot. And answering that phone, putting in information and taking 80 new patients' insurance, like there's, that's a lot. Like people don't realize when you're at a high new patient office, it's a lot on the front end.
Yeah. No, I think it's great. I remember you seeing another podcast, the whole grace over guilt concept. Yeah. And I think that's huge.
Yeah. I don't even know where I heard that. I think sometimes it gets penned to me. I did not make that up. That was not mine. I heard that somewhere.
I mean, we can sit and have a conversation over a few drinks. Paul and I can probably tell you hundreds of stories of all kinds of stuff that's happened. I've had theft in my office where I had to call the police on somebody where I wasn't even there one day. I mean, with great power comes great responsibility. So here it is. A couple of things that were in my brain that I didn't make sure we hit is metrics and making sure that you can at least stay on top of metrics right now. Do we also have some kind of tracking where we know how many phone calls we're capturing, how many we're missing? Because that's one thing that concerns me with one front desk person and this volume of people that are coming in. I want to make sure that you're capturing phone calls and not missing them. Do you know those metrics?
That's a good point.
So yes and no. So we have worked with a company who has sent out some mailers for us, and they have done an awesome job. They have this great software set up where I can go in and I can listen to the calls that came in from those numbers and see which ones were answered and which ones weren't, and shows on a map where the calls came from, and that's been great. But just calls in general, I don't know a percentage. We have Mango. I don't know if I haven't looked into if I can get that information from them.
There's gotta
I'm sure
be
I can,
a way.
But
yeah.
Yeah.
I think my concern is you may be missing calls that you don't realize, because I don't think there's any way that one person can be answering all these phone calls and not missing them. So you may want to consider there's a lot of different things you can do for that. Our practice was different. When we first started, we didn't take any new calls into the office because it's an easy low-hanging fruit to have them just make sure. When we've done 10,000 mailers consistently for 9 years now, we never stopped. Just because I know some people like that's old school, but it's always a low percentage there and we just keep doing it. So we always get tons of calls and we always did it that way.
Every month you do 10,000?
We still do. I know people still like, why do you do that much? I'm just like, you know what? I have these old grandmothers that come into the office, and if you're in our 30,000 mailing list, you'll get one once a quarter. I have grandmothers that come in there and they're just like, they've got like four of them. That means that they took that much time to make their decision and it just works. And for us, we always look at what's our missed call rate, because if the missed call rate is going like awry, we have to do something about it, because there's so many opportunities you could be missing. I think that could be an action item that you need to do, is you need to see,
totally,
how do I get that metric? And I can't remember, somebody was telling me at a convention, I think a lot of practices in this country, like the answer call rate is like 60. Does that sound right, Paul? Something like that?
Yeah. I was talking to Chris Phelps. I quoted him and I actually called him, because he does that call tracker ROI stuff. And I was like, I need to get the stat. I think it was like 50, 55%. It's insane.
Well, this company that we're doing the marketing through told us that based on their numbers of the calls that came through and the production we've done and the production that's come from those mailers, they said that each new patient is worth about $1,000 in our practice right now. So
totally.
But when you look at those metrics, the thing I like to see, how many actual calls we got in a month, how many actual calls, and what the percentage of the time that it's answered. So as we went along, we've kind of tweaked things. Like, so first we did it all the call center, and then we tweaked it and we said, you know what, we're going to make a phone tree so that all the new patients are still going to the call center, but we get all the existing patients. So dial 1 if you're a new patient, dial 2 if you're an existing patient. So this way, patient's got that sore tooth after a root canal, like we can handle it better in-house than somebody in a call center could. So I would look at that, because that could be some really like low-hanging fruit that you're missing that can really, like, it may cause you to make decisions though. Maybe I need somebody else to answer the phones, and that's a good opportunity for phone training, like Paul said.
I guess what I was worried about with a call center, somebody answering the phones, I just don't have confidence in how they would answer it and the personal touch behind it and stuff. You know, yeah, it's concerning to me.
100%. You have to audit that to death.
Right.
Till this day, we still use a call center, and we have 2 or 3 people that answer our phones, and our practice manager will randomly call with sometimes different people, and we make sure. when they're in front of their computer, it's just like they're in front of our office. And we train them so they know what we're looking for, where to put people. So that requires some effort too, but having a 93% answer rate is well worth it. I mean, we're not missing any opportunities.
We also do use a call center as well. And I just think, like, at the startup level, it's like this push and pull of, gosh, like, it's like investing in the future versus how much are we bringing in now? And that's the thing is, like, okay, if a missed new patient is worth $1,000, you hire one full-time employee that just makes sure that phone, that's their only job. They just look at that phone. They got to get one patient in. And if they're maybe like a $20, $25, I don't know what it is by you, but it's how many new patients, how many calls do they have to answer? Because are they going to get one that's going to pay for their salary for X amount of days? They're probably going to get a lot, you know, but it's like the same thing. It's like, man, do I want to push my payroll? But what would be helpful is to know that answer. If you're not missing them and you're getting all your calls, cool, no problem. I think at this point, it's like looking at those missed opportunities and jumping in investment-wise as much as you can that you're financially comfortable with, getting over that hesitation. So coming up on time, did you get one more? Anything else that you wanted to ask before we wrap it all up?
Man, now you guys have been super helpful, answered a lot of great questions, gave me a lot of advice that I wasn't even expecting that seems very obvious after you said it. So yeah, I appreciate you guys taking the time, and I definitely have some things to take to my partner and us to start, like you said, take some action items out of it.
We're recording this right now about end of November. Can we get you back next year and we'll do a, and maybe it could be like non-anonymous, like, here I am, guys. I'm
out of the shadows.
It's like the swan, the reveal. Wow.
I'd love that. That'd be great.
That'd be cool. Well, dude, thanks so much for coming on. Thank you, Henry. Always fun having you on. If you guys listen or ever interested in working with Henry or I, please check out the website, www.dentalpracticeheroes.com. And if you want to come on and sit in the hot seat, please send me an email, dentalpracticeheroes@gmail.com, or you can contact me at the website. Thank you all so much. You guys all have a great night.
Hey everyone, this is Dr. Ty Hardoon with Colorado Surgical Institute. Dr. Brisky and myself have really enjoyed doing these podcasts with Dr. Etch and talking about everything clinical. So keep your guys' feedback coming. It really helps us curate what we're going to be talking about on the podcast. If you want to learn how to do live patient surgeries and actually do the work yourself with the guidance of Dr. Brisky and myself, come out and see us. We're in Northern Colorado. We're just north of Denver, and we can have you do anything from single implants to wisdom teeth to IV sedation to oral sedation, bone blocks and GBR and sinus lifts, vertical and lateral, and full arch with the whole digital workflow using photogrammetry, 3D printers, mills, and all of the above. So we're here to help. Reach out to us. You can call Chris Richards, our director, at 970-420-6148, and he will definitely have a hero discount for you guys because we love Paul and we love DPH.